welcome to the Level 9 Podcast. This is part 2 of episode 11. This episode, we're just going to be going over the state of play that Sony and PlayStation had on Thursday. Of course, I'm joined here with Alex. Alex, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing pretty swell. How about you, Jesse?
I'm doing good. I'm pretty excited to dive into this episode. I'm a PlayStation guy, and there's a lot to kind of go over here. We're also joined here with a special guest, Mr. Jordan Jackson.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me. I'm excited. I'm a bit of a PlayStation fanboy, so this was a great opportunity to jump in and give an opinion on what PlayStation's talking about right now.
Yeah, thank you for being on here. Now, you mentioned you got a PS5 and Miles Morales.
Yeah, so I was lucky enough to get in on a pre-order from Best Buy. So I got mine on actually the day after launch day, whether you want to blame COVID or whatever for shipping, but it came the day after launch and came with Miles Morales and jumped right in and had a blast with it. I was amazed by what they did with the haptic feedback and the new DualSense controller. I really enjoyed it, and I'm excited to see what they do with that in the future. But, you know, Miles, the game itself, it was exactly what they advertised, and that's what made me happiest about it. It was more of the original Spider-Man with a bit of a different twist. You know, they told you it wasn't going to be 50, 60 hour long game. It was priced accordingly, and it delivered. It just gave me an extension of what the first game was and how great that was, and gave me another, you know, 10 to 15 hours with that world.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of what they're doing with the adaptive triggers too. I haven't experienced it in much just because there's not many PS5 games out yet, but the way they work in Miles Morales just blew me away with, like, the second I started web-slinging across New York.
Yeah, for sure. And I've stuck myself into Dirt 5 quite a bit. And I know racing games aren't for everybody, but as far as the triggers go, it really showed off what the capabilities are. You really get a feel for, you know, the gas and the brake pedal the entire time you're playing the game. And it's obviously kind of a rally-based game. So sometimes you're, you know, in the mud or on the pavement or in the air. And the adaptive triggers really work well with all those scenarios. So when you're in the air, there's no pressure at all on the trigger. It's like an old PS4 controller. It goes right to all the way down without much pressure. And then as soon as you hit the ground, the force comes back and you're back on the pedal, and it adjusts based on how many wheels are on the ground. It's really neat, and I'm really excited to see what they do with that going forward.
Yeah, you actually let me try that Dirt 5 with the haptic feedback, and I gotta say, I was super impressed by it, especially being like an Xbox guy normally. I gotta say, the PS5 have good themselves with that controller. I personally prefer it over the Xbox One or Xbox Series X controller at this point, just because the haptic feedback is a game changer.
Have you played any shooters with the adaptive triggers yet? Because I've played Borderlands 3, and just the way each weapon works. I mean, if you have like an RPG, the trigger kind of gives you a little more tension, like an SMG, and it just rapidly kind of goes up against your fingers. Really cool how they sort of integrated that into each game.
Yeah, for sure. I hopped into Black Ops Cold War a little bit, and I bought the PS5 version rather than the PS4 version. So, you know, all the bells and whistles right away, and exactly the same thing as you're saying. Depending on the gun you're using, the trigger reacts accordingly, and it's really neat. And it's I'm really excited, especially this week with the announcement of a version 2 of a PSVR, to see what they can do in that situation and how much more immersive those games will feel when you're in VR mode, as well as, you know, getting that kind of thing out of the triggers.
Have you had much experience with the first VR anyway? Because I know I haven't yet, and I really want to find a reason to start it. I just haven't really. I mean, I know there's a couple Star Wars games that kind of look a bit interesting, but I'm hoping this next version kind of gets all the kinks out that a lot of people had with the first one.
Yeah, I do have the original one, and I'll say that the experience while in game is a lot of fun. There's not Alex keeps getting on my case about not playing Astrobot Rescue Mission yet, and
yeah, it's a phenomenal game,
and I have it. I just haven't sunk into it yet. But after playing Astro, that comes with the PS5, holy smokes, what a game that is, and how much fun I had with that. So I think that's that Astrobot Rescue Mission is next on the hit list for the VR. But just the experience of the original VR. I think it's really good. I'm a guy who suffers a little bit from motion sickness, but it's not terrible. I haven't really experienced it much with the original PSVR. I know some people that's a really tough thing with VR in general, but so that hasn't really affected me too much. The problem that I have with the original PSVR is that if you don't have the space or the setup to leave it set up all the time, it's really inconvenient. It takes a lot of time to set up. There's wires going everywhere. And, you know, especially if you're living with your significant other and, you know, your PlayStation's in a spot where you can't just close the door and no one sees it. Most of the time, they want it to be tidy around the house and with all those wires and stuff running around. I think that's the biggest issue. So I don't get as much use out of it as I would like because I can't leave it set up constantly. And I don't want to take the time to set it up for the half an hour or hour that I'm going to play it.
Yeah, that was my biggest criticism for the PSVR too. I loved it, but man, it's a pain in the butt to set up so many different cables going to all these different places, and that stupid streaming box you have to plug your thing into is just annoying. So I hope the second version is kind of a bit better.
It sounds like with the very, very minimal announcement they made about version 2.0, they did make a point to say that it'll be a single wire hookup. So,
oh, thank goodness.
I mean, a wireless would have been ideal, but obviously that's a you know, that's a lot of technology to stick into a headset for a reasonably new feature that PlayStation's putting out there. So if they can get it down to just a USB, a single USB or a single HDMI, then that is that's a game changer for it for sure.
Now going from one PlayStation announcement to a whole boatload from State of Play this past week, I'll let Alex kick things off just because he's not much of a PlayStation guy as much as I'm trying to get him to find a PS5.
Hey, you and me both.
Jordan's already tried. Well, I was living with Jordan actually when the pre-orders went live for the PS5, and I went the other way. I got the Xbox. So,
I mean, what when you watched the State of Play on Thursday, what sort of jumped out to you off of the Sony's list of announcements here?
Kena: Bridge of Spirits looks like the type of game that I'd probably pick up right out of the gate. Like that's probably really the only one that really jumped out at me. But I think the biggest reason why it did it, like a lot of other ones didn't really jump out, is because I knew they were all PlayStation. And I was like, you know what, I have a PS4, but like these ones are definitely not all going to be able to run on my PS4. So I was like, some of them look really good, but a lot of them are just like, okay, I'll think about these games once I get a PS5.
Well, Knockout City for the PS4 was announced, coming out in August, the dodgeball online game.
Also announced for the Switch.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Yeah, but Kena: Bridge of Spirits, we got a release date and then a whole lot of gameplay. That game definitely kind of headlined the list of announcements. That game just looks beautiful every time I see it.
Yeah, for me too. I'm with Alex on this one. I, as far as the overall takeaway from State of Play, I would say underwhelmed but not disappointed was my reaction. I wasn't expecting a lot, but they didn't give a lot of new information. There was kind of updates on a lot of stuff that's already been announced, which is good, but you know, they didn't really blow me away with anything. I was kind of expecting one announcement that was like, holy cow, I didn't see that coming. But for me, there's some stuff I'm excited about in there, but Kena: Bridge of Spirits as well was the one where I saw it and I was like, this is a game that I didn't really have on my radar, but after seeing it in State of Play, this is something I'm extremely interested in and may even be a day one purchase for me.
Yeah, Jesse, I know we were talking and you had some pretty high expectations for this one. So how did you feel after finishing it up here? I know you were expecting like God of War announcements and Horizon and all the big games.
Yeah, I might have been expecting a little too much, but I mean, I would have liked to see, I kind of figured we were going to see a Forbidden West, mm-hmm. something like a release date or gameplay or something, just because that seems to be the most expected, but we didn't get that. I mean, it started off with some Returnal gameplay, which I'm still not sold on. It looks wonderful on the PS5, but I'm just not entirely sure like what the game's really about or how I'm going to enjoy it. And then we got Kena, I think, was a game or two after that. And then that Deathloop theme song that I played over and over in my head. I'm still singing it today. It's just stuck in my head, that 007-esque trailer they showed. Sort of looks like Dishonored, but just stripped away with all the stealth, and it's just focused on the combat, which is definitely exciting. But I mean, yeah, I mean, we didn't really get much sort of like what Jordan said. I'm not disappointed, but I'm a little underwhelmed. I mean, Oddworld Soulstorm was also showcased, which looks pretty good. I read that it's going to be a PS Plus game next month. I'm not sure if that's true or not. Don't quote me on that, but
it's a PS Plus game at launch.
Oh, okay, so I mean, that's something to look forward to. And then we ended the state of play with Final Fantasy being showcased on the PS4 and then PS5, which was also announced Saturday as a PS Plus game for March, which definitely blew me away because that game came out in April, and it's definitely a big budget game.
Yeah, and I think to be fair, I'm not a huge Final Fantasy player, but that Final Fantasy announcement probably was a huge deal for a lot of people, to give PlayStation a little bit of credit on how they wrapped that show up. But, you know, it obviously depends on what your interests are and your gaming likes. But that one wasn't huge for me, but that one could have made the show for a lot of people that were watching. So.
Yeah, I'm the same boat there. I was like, I knew something big was coming at the end. And then when it was Final Fantasy, I was like, oh. But that's not that's not to take away from the people that love Final Fantasy. I just does not sit with me. It's not my type of game, but I do know some people who are just ecstatic about it. So good job for PlayStation for ending that with a bang, and for it to not have it leaked like the Pokemon Direct was.
I think one surprise game that sort of piqued my interest a little bit, I actually have two, the Five Nights Security Breach. I remember playing those back. I think it was on my iPad in high school, and I enjoyed them. And then this, it's sort of like a third person or first person, and you can have a lot more movement and that sort of thing. So I think that's going to be a bit more immersive. And then that Sifu, I think I'm pronouncing that right, that kung fu action fighting game that they showcased, that game surprised me. That looks really fun.
The art style is definitely interesting, and something I look forward to seeing more of for sure.
Yeah, that Five Nights at Freddy's game, gonna pass, way too scary for me.
Yeah, I know you're not much of a horror guy, but
nope, I've seen that. I pretty much went the other way, like took like a bathroom break or something. I was not watching that trailer.
Yeah, as soon as that girl with the voiceover said this next game will be I can't remember what she said, but she said something along the lines of, this will be, if you're a horror fan, you know, watch now. And I was definitely up on my seat when I heard that.
I'm curious, Jesse, you mentioned Returnal really quick, and I'm curious if you could maybe tell me a little bit more about your thoughts on that, because for me, Returnal was a game I was actually really excited about when it got announced. And after seeing what PlayStation showed, I'm actually a little less excited, because I think it brought in more confusion than there was in the first place. We got some gameplay, but we still really don't have no idea what it's about. So, you know, before this announcement, or before this state of play, I should say, Returnal was meant to be a mystery almost. They weren't giving you a lot of information and kind of letting you think whatever it was going to be in your own mind. But now we've seen some gameplay and we still don't know much about it. So I've kind of went the other way on that after seeing Returnal. I'm curious to see what you feel about that.
It was giving off some major Death Stranding vibes for the longest time there. Like, it was intriguing enough to be like, what is this game? And then after you've seen it, you're like, what is this game still?
So. Yeah, I had this the same conversation with my girlfriend. I kind of forced her hand into watching the state of play with me, even though she really couldn't care less. And then Returnal popped on, and I had a lot of excitement and anticipation leading up to last Thursday's event. And then, like you said, it was just, I'm a little underwhelmed with just the visuals, the combat and graphics look phenomenal on the PS5. I'm glad we're getting a PS5 exclusive. I mean, it seems like most games have been kind of in between either PS4 or PS5. So I'm excited to have a PS5 game specifically, but I mean, I'm not sure what really the story entails. I know they mentioned if you die, the map kind of changes, the enemy location changes, that sort of thing. So that side of strategy having to change each time definitely intrigues me, but I'm just a little confused as to what to expect. Is it a horror game? Is it an action game? We saw some first person that gave me some Silent Hill / PT vibes when she walked into the house. I'm just confused as to what direction they're taking, if they're even certain as to which way they want to kind of take it.
I mentioned to Alex yesterday too, through text message, that I realize there's a lot of differences before I state what I'm about to state, but Returnal also, it was odd to me that they showed Returnal and Deathloop in the same state of play, because there are certainly some similarities between those two games with the, you know, dying and regenerating. Obviously, Deathloop, you're learning from what you did the last time and adjusting as you move through the game. But Returnal, as you mentioned, it seems like when you die, you're going to be reborn into, you know, a whole new map with new enemies and new locations. So similar mindset, obviously different execution.
Yeah, I'm definitely more excited for Deathloop, especially with being Bethesda and a first-person sort of shooter with these abilities that the characters were showing off during the event. Returnal, I think I'll just have to wait and see. I know it's $89.99 right now here in Canada. Yeah, so I think I might wait to just hear what people's opinions are once it launches, and maybe wait until it goes on sale, unless it comes out and just blows everyone's minds away, which I don't really expect it to do.
Yeah, I'm the $89.99. Alex's reaction kind of says it all, and I agree with you, Jesse. I think it's exciting that we're getting PS5 exclusives. Not that, you know, it's hard to get a PS5 right now. I understand that a lot of people, whether you can't get one, you can't afford one right now, whatever it might be, there's still reason to put out games on PS4. But for those who have PS5s, it's nice to get something that we know was designed to maximize the power of the system, right? So I'm excited for that to come out in that sense. But something that Alex probably doesn't know about having a Series X is this $89.99 price tag in Canada, because that's what happens when you get the full next-gen experience, is it's the $10 extra that we're not used to, because everything's coming out on Xbox One and Xbox Series X for the next, you know, what is it, 2 years, I believe?
2 years, yeah. But then you have the Game Pass too, so I probably will never have to buy a full price game as long as it's, let's stick with the first party.
Yeah, that's also true. I mean, that's a good point as well. But, you know, PlayStation's made it very clear that they're not interested in their first parties going on a games as a service on day one. And, you know, I guess if you're them, based on their track record, why would you be right now? Because, you know, people are going to buy The Last of Us 2, or people are going to buy Spider-Man, or whatever it is they put out. And when with 120 million PS4s out there, you can afford to do that.
Yeah, the PlayStation exclusives are in high demand, so it doesn't matter. Like they can probably put $100 and people would still buy them. So like the $89.99 is a pretty high price tag, but I also get it, because the new technology with like the controller and stuff like that, like I'm sure the game's got a bit more expensive to develop. So
yeah, and I think the other thing to keep in mind, and you know, you kind of hear some people talking about this when they defend the price tag, is there really wasn't a price hike in video games for, you know, a good like 7 to 10 years. You know, when PS3 was late in its life cycle, games were like $79.99. And then all through the PS4 life cycle, they were $79.99. So it's probably overdue based on the amount of hours they put into these games to create them for us. And I'm just happy it's only $10, because I think it could have been more.
It's interesting that they elected to go with that price tag when you look at Deathloop is currently, it's been on sale. I think it's $71 or $74.99 on the PS store for up until launch, I believe. And then Kena is only like $51 or $54.99. So it's just intriguing the way what goes into developers' thought process when they're coming up with price tags.
Are those both games like for PS4 as well? Because that could be that could be a huge reason. Did you say Returnal was a PS5 only?
Returnal is, yeah. I think Deathloop is as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, Deathloop is PS5 and PC, and then it comes to Xbox in 2022. Right.
And then there's some other games that are, you know, again, look, to your point, Alex, coming out on PS4 as well. But and maybe not a game that takes as much time to develop. But if you look at like a Monster Energy Supercross that comes out, you know, next week, it's $60, like physical. So, you know, it's you wonder how much of that game is literally just a PS4 game in a PS5 case, because obviously they're not taking a ton of time to increase the features for next gen.
Yeah, I think it's good what PlayStation is doing, though. It's starting to pop out some PlayStation 5 games only, because it's like you need to kind of get people to like want to buy the console itself, or it's like, oh, I don't need to buy PS5 yet because the game's still coming out on PS4. But those kind of games, like I'm sure if we see God of War come on PS5, those PS5s would be hard to get again.
Yeah, I think I would say Horizon and maybe, well, God of War hasn't given a release date yet, so it's hard to speak on that. But I would say Horizon and potentially God of War are the last two major first-party games that get PS4 releases. And then from that point forward, you know, PS5 will be out for a year or more at that time, and it'll be push everyone into that next gen from PlayStation's perspective.
Yeah, that was similar to the PS4's life cycle when the PS3 it came out. They were sort of splitting between the two consoles for a few months afterwards, but then they kind of gave up on the PS3 and said, all right, PS4 moving forward, we're not focusing on PS3. But I know someone with Sony has said they're focusing on PS4 games for another 3 or 4 years. So I'm a little concerned about that, just because I want them to focus on the future and the newer consoles. I know people still hold on to their PS4s just because acquiring a PS5 is a little difficult right now. But I mean, I want to just focus on the future and what is next for gaming.
I agree. I also think that Sony's the company that told us they were going to fully support the Vita, and it lasted like a year and a half. So we'll see. we'll see what they actually do. And when it comes down to it, if the PS5, it's easy to say that right now because you can't get your hands on a PS5. But if you can get to the point where you can walk into a Best Buy and grab one off the shelf, then PlayStation is certainly going to want people buying those. And especially if they're getting an extra $10 for every game, you know, they want them moving up to that that next gen and getting that extra revenue from each copy.
Yeah. Going back to the state of play, there's another game that actually jumped out when we were talking about it, and that was kind of like Solar Ash. It kind of, I don't know, it just kind of gave me some like, well, I mean, it's probably the same company that made Hyperlight Drifter, so that's probably why it was giving me some Hyperlight Drifter vibes, but that game kind of caught my eye as well.
Yeah, the graphics and gameplay we got certainly intrigued me. It just looked beautiful. I even, again, pointed to my girlfriend and forced her to watch that one just because it looked really good, and even she agreed too.
It's a nice thing about some of these games is, honestly, that's not a game for me. That's probably not a game I'm going to play, but you watch these state of plays and it's like, holy cow, that looks fantastic. It doesn't matter if you're going to play it or not. It's just a beautiful game. And
yeah.
Even Crash Bandicoot 4, it was showcased on the PS5 during the event and it looked phenomenal.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's working. Whether people are interested in those games or not, that's working towards showing off the capabilities of the next system. You mentioned Crash Bandicoot. When they opened with that, I was like, oh, great. You know, another PS4 game that's they're upscaling to PS5, and you get a free copy if you have the PS4 version. But as that went on, they actually talked about some of the new features with, again, the haptic feedback and the triggers. And I was like, oh, well, this is more encouraging that they're actually taking the time to, you know, upgrade the game and not just give you, you know, 4K at 60 FPS and that's all you get when you upgrade. But you actually get some new features with the PS5 version of that game, which is neat.
Yeah, I got some major GTA vibes when the Crash logo came up. I was like, oh, we got a new Crash. Oh, okay, it's just Crash Crash 4 again. But the new haptic feedback stuff kind of makes it a new game in its own way, because like it's kind of a brand new experience going through it. So I was happy to see that, because it's I was the same boat. I was like, oh, here we go. Starting off with another game. Like, is this whole presentation just going to be the game's getting up-res at all? Like, but then when they started talking about the haptic feedback, I was like, all right, yeah, that makes sense. And I would definitely probably play Crash again. Not that I played it in the first place, but I would play it again if I had like a new way to play it, I guess.
It was also a way for them to kind of get some of their features of the PS5 in there without actually doing it. Cause they talked about, you know, going for the 106% completion on it, how you can use the activity tiles on the PS5 to track your stats and all that stuff. So I think as much as, you know, an update on Crash Bandicoot 4, it was also a little bit about just selling what the PS5 can do.
That's fair. I didn't think about it that way. I was very confused with the 106 completion. I was like, wait, what? But then as they went on, it made more sense.
It's gotten to the point now where if I pick up a PS4 controller or I play a PS4 game on the PS5 and I don't have the adaptive triggers or the certain vibration that I'm accustomed to now, I'm almost disappointed now with PS4 games. I've been spoiled.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. I know, as I mentioned before, you know, sometimes your systems are on TVs that are not solely committed to gaming. And, you know, for a game like Apex, you can still hop on your PS4 and play that game and, you know, not notice much of a difference, except when you pick up the controller, because it feels very different in your hand. The responsiveness is different. The vibrations are different. So occasionally, I'm on the old PS4 Pro playing some Apex while the girlfriend's watching TV or whatever it might be. And there's definitely a different feeling there. And it's not in the gameplay whatsoever, but the controller is... It's going to be disappointing, in the long run. If PlayStation keeps this DualSense technology going and getting better and better, I'm sure they'll try with upgrades to over the PS5's life cycle, because it's as easy as putting out a software update on the system. Now we saw that on launch day, there was a software update for the controller, not even for the game or the system, for the controller. So we'll see what they do with it, but. The better they make that, the harder it's going to be to go back and use old controllers. That's for sure.
I hope they stay with it, because I know they like when they released a touchpad, like that was the biggest thing for the longest time, and then they kind of just dropped everything for the touch. Like that touchpad is kind of useless now unless you play Detroit Become Human.
I think it'll be, with Sony first party games, I think you're going to see the support. What concerns me is how long. And Activision is going to support it with Call of Duty, especially if Xbox doesn't get on that train in this generation at all. Because then you're developing completely different games. Like, I'm sure it's, not a full remake of the game, but at some point you're going to have to go in and put in features in one copy and not in the other copy. So that's what concerns me more is, the EAs and the Activisions and the Ubisofts and those non-first party Sony companies, and see what they do with it in the long term.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, actually. Like, is it only the first party PlayStation games that are $89.99, or all games on PS5 are $89.99? Because if that's the case, like Activision going out of the way to put in the Death of Triggers into the new Call of Duty game, but if Xbox doesn't jump on board, they could increase the price of Call of Duty for PS5, but for Series X it'll be the same price.
Jesse, maybe you can correct me on this for sure. I don't think Sony is mandating a price from third-party developers. So, Ubisoft or whoever is free to launch at whatever price they want to right now. I think they've been doing it at the same price as on Xbox because, they don't want to upset PlayStation users, frankly, with a $10 more expensive game. But like Hitman 3 is only 80 bucks. The new Resident Evil 8 is going to only be 80 bucks, but Demon Souls is 90 and Sackboy is 80, and they're both PlayStation Studios. So
yeah, I know Cold War is 79, and then if you get with the PS4 and PS5 version, I think it's like 80 or 90 bucks. So I think it just kind of differentiates between game and developer and that sort of thing. I think we pretty much covered all of the announcements. It was only about a 25 minute event. We'll wrap up here. Alex and I
Well, nobody talked about Knockout City yet.
Well, I mentioned it to Alex.
We mentioned it. I kind of brushed it off a little bit.
Dodgeball online game.
Did anybody get Rocket Arena vibes from that game? Yes, like, yes. There's going to be 7 people playing this game in a month.
It did. Oh, yeah, that's why I kind of just brushed it off. I was like, okay. Yeah. I mean, I would give it a shot if it was like that type of game that I'd play if it was on PS Plus or like something like that. I'd be like, all right, let's play it. But
yeah, I mean, we hadn't had the PS Plus announcements up until the event, so I kind of figured Knockout City was going to be announced at the end of the trailer, saying, "Hey, PS Plus free now, go download it."
Yeah, it's that game to me screams, if you don't make it free to PS Plus members, you're not going to sell it. So
yeah, even when I seen it on the Switch, like I was like, this game, like the Switch has crap internet anyways, like crap online anyways, so I don't know how it's gonna work on the Switch, let alone on a console that actually has good multiplayer systems.
But now Alex and I recently brought up our most anticipated games of the coming year. We can wrap up with that but Jordan, what is your most anticipated it doesn't necessarily have to be a PS5 game, just video game coming up in 2021?
Oh, geez. Assuming Horizon comes out this year, I just played through Horizon, the first one, through COVID times. So I'm really excited about that after playing the first one to see what they do with it. But, I'm a racing enthusiast, so I'm also hoping the new Gran Turismo launches this year, and I'm sure I'll sink some time into that too, because
I think that was reported to be delayed till 2022.
Yeah, I know it's I know there was a lot of talk about a release date being in you know, fine print on one of the videos they put out, and then they backtracked on that a little bit. But if you're looking for a game that has been announced to be a 2021 release, it's got to be Horizon for me so far.
No Halo? Come on.
Definitely not Halo.
Yeah, I think Alex's was Halo, if I'm not mistaken, and mine was the Ratchet and Clank for the PS5.
Yeah. Nothing against Halo, but I mean, I've been a PlayStation guy since the PS2. I'll be honest with you, I've never played a Halo game in my life.
Well, let's freaking all team up here and play some Halo.
Well, I've never played one either, so we can jump in that same boat.
I mean, I'd be up for it under the right circumstances. It would have to be more of like a COVID times, though, because I'm not sure I want to spend the few hours a night I have to spend to dedicate to gaming playing Halo right now.
That's fair. That's valid. Well, let's get started right now while COVID still kind of around.
Yeah, my first console was a PS2, and it came with Ratchet and Clank Going Commando and Shut Your Mouth, the WWE game. And ever since then, I've been a PlayStation guy myself as well.
Yeah, the PS2 got me hooked. I know. I said to someone just the other day, they said, man, the PS4 was a lot of fun, though. And I said, you know, it really gives the PS2 a run for its money when it comes to my favorite console of all time. But I'm not sure it quite got there because it doesn't have the nostalgia yet.
I don't think any console will reach the nostalgia that the PlayStation 2 has.
I don't know. And 64 is up there for me.
Another good console for sure. And, you know, a lot of good memories. But the PS2 was like the first one where, and this is going to age me compared to you guys, but that was the first one where I was like buying my own games and making my own decisions on what to play on it. So, yeah.
I had to beg my mom for the next Ratchet and Clank game.
I think I was still coloring on floors in kindergarten at that point.
I remember having bets with my college roommates on NHL 06 games on PS2.
I skipped the PS2 completely. I went straight from N64 to GameCube, so I was one of those kids that didn't get it to online until the 360 era.
We'll wrap things up here. We want to thank Jordan Jackson for joining us and talking about the state of play. Jordan, where can we find you on any social media platform?
Yeah, you can, ironically enough, it's a gaming podcast, but my Twitter handle is @IamSportsGuy. Obviously a sports fan, much like Alex and Jesse, but, you know, there's some video game stuff on there too, and anything to do with dogs. I love dogs. So dogs, video games, or sports, that's the Twitter handle you want to go to.
I think Jesse and I talk about starting a sports podcast in the future, so I'm going to have you on there too.
Well, I'm happy to guest on that one as well, guys.
Perfect. And Alex, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at AlexLanglois15. Much like Jordan, I talk a lot about sports on my Twitter, but I also mention a lot of video games. So you can find me on there, or you can find our podcast at the Level 9 Podcast on Twitter as well.
And I am at Jesse Benoit. I talk about mostly video games and a lot of Tom Brady. So if you like Tom Brady or the NFL, that is the page for you.
That's my QB.
Thank you very much for listening on this two-parter episode, and we'll see you next time on the Level 9 Podcast.